He is one of America's prominent sports commentators and columnists,
known for his fearless opinions and passionate dialogue.
I know, it's sad, but the best sports conversation has absolutely nothing to do with sports.
He has perfected the Daily Sports Podcast, having produced hundreds of topical, credible shows without even a hint of fake news.
No filters, no mute buttons, no BS, just me and whatever the hell I feel like talking about.
He has done 1,700 TV shows, written 8,000 columns, broadcast hundreds of talk shows, published a book.
He has covered every major sports event nationally and worldwide.
And yet, we still can't shut him up.
The ceiling is the roof.
And now from Los Angeles, inside his studio by the Pacific Ocean,
where he plans on hanging out with a beer immediately after this podcast is recorded.
Oh, man.
Here he is, Jay Mariotti.
The show is unmuted. I'm Jay in Los Angeles, where Jared Goff has devolved into the NFL version of a Hollywood matinee idol turned bust. If this is a Rob Lowe, Brat Pack thing, the Rams simply do not have time for the comeback. Goff doesn't appear fit for prime time, stinking out the last two Sunday nights on the biggest stage, and suddenly the LA Rams are more a candidate for another early postseason elimination than a team that could play the Chargers in an all-LA Super Bowl. The all-world offense was snuffed out again, this time by the proud and inspired champion Eagles, who again called on Nick Foles, that man, that legend, to bail them out after yet another Carson Wentz injury. Now, Foles will not be leading another miracle Super Bowl run, but while Goff was hurting the Rams with more interceptions under intense pressure, including a killer blooper, Foles was making very few mistakes in managing a victory that all but hands the New Orleans Saints the top NFC seed. With 7 picks in 3 games, Goff is looking like that scared rookie of 2 years ago and needing to navigate only 58 yards for a potential tying last-minute touchdown. He missed Josh Reynolds in the end zone on the final play. Is Goff hurt, or is he just a wild pitcher who can't find the strike zone? And it's not just him. Todd Gurley, who stumbled off the field and cannot afford to be banged up and worn out at this point of the season, could not get out of bounds on that last drive, nor could Gerald Everett, costing the Rams valuable time. And punt returner JoJo Natson, no Ollie Matson, Google him, fumbled away the ball without being hit and was chewed out by teammate Brandon Cooks. Not good. Can Goff snap out of it? He'd better, because the Rams' defense was pushed around again by the Eagles, who remain alive somehow in the sloppy NFC wildcard race. Here was Goff.
It's good to go through some adversity at some point. We were 11-1 prior to last week, and the only adversity we faced was in New Orleans, and so kind of going through this now, and you know, we are in a position where we know we are in the playoffs, but at the same time, we, like Sean said, we have to be urgent about getting these things fixed and getting them fixed throughout the week. And I mean, it's like I said, it's nothing we haven't done though, so it should be very fixable.
And here was his coach, Sean McVay, no longer quite the boy wonder.
You got to be able to figure this out and figure it out fast, because these last couple weeks we're doing things that are totally uncharacteristic of what good football teams do, what we've done through the first, you know, handful of games this season. You know, but the only thing we know how to do is go back to work, look at ourselves. Everybody's got a hand in this, and we got to get it figured out fast. It's guys that are making decisions that, you know, typically we haven't seen. It's guys that are making mistakes that we typically haven't seen. But however you cut it, we're all in this together. We've all got to do better. And, you know, it starts with me, but, you know, we got to figure it out. And, you know, that's that. All I know how to do is go back to work as hard as we possibly can to figure out the solutions and get better for next week. But this wasn't good enough. And, you know, it's a tough pill to swallow.
Recalling how Goff crashed last season in the playoffs, is he doomed to gag when the bright lights are shining, which is not a good thing in L.A. or really anywhere? A Mariotti aside, 3 years ago when I worked in San Francisco, I covered a big national TV game between Goff and Cal versus Utah in Salt Lake City. Jared threw 5 picks in that game, And the headline the next morning was Cal Goff's one up. The pun still applies. I would prefer to see Maroon 5 do the halftime show, and that's who you're getting, world, and overgrown boy band, than see the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl again. And you know what? Maybe I am getting my wish, because a week after blowing a game in Miami on botched coverage of a last-ditch double lateral, the Patriots handed yet another one to the desperate Steelers and suddenly are looking at no buys and no home field advantage in the AFC playoffs. And this time, it was Brady, Tom Brady, with the unsightly mistake, recklessly heaving a ball that was picked off by a leaping Joe Hayden, who went high over Rob Gronkowski. That was Brady's first red zone pick in 180 attempts. Look, the Pats are vulnerable in December right now, a rarity in the Belichick era. And this time, along with 14 penalties, including a real bad holding call on the final drive, the offense could not get much going beyond one blown coverage on a comical Brady to Chris Hogan touchdown early. Tom, GOAT, greatest of all time, what were you thinking on that fatal pick?
He's trying to throw it away and didn't.
Was that because you were jostled as you let it go? Or?
Yeah, I was just trying to flick it out of bounds. Didn't want to take a sack and just shouldn't happen. Not playing well enough to win, and can come in a lot of different, ways, turnovers, and just missed opportunities. I think that's what it comes down to. Too many plays where we've got opportunities to do stuff with it, and we don't. So it's football. I mean, it's wish it were outcomes were different, obviously, this week, last week, but just have to get back to work.
This was happening even as the Steelers were dealing with the continued misfires of kicker Chris Boswell, who was left to sit all by himself on the bench before finally, mercifully hitting a late kick. And they also had more picks from the maddening Ben Roethlisberger. I still would not bank on the Steelers, who now have to go to New Orleans and still might lose the AFC North to rookie Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. And why was Antonio Brown dancing on the sideline as Brady drove his offense in the final minute? What is wrong with Antonio Brown? Needs a lobotomy or something. And why did rookie running back Jalen Samuels, after being pushed out of bounds, actually sit on the New England bench for a few seconds before being shoved away? What's he doing? And did Juju Smith-Schuster actually have a hot dog at a tailgate outside Heinz Field before the game? Even when they win, Mike Tomlin has no control over his players. Even in glory, the Steelers always have something silly going on. But the fans did rattle the Patriots on the final drive with that Pittsburgh theme song Renegade blasting over the speakers, single-handedly keeping the band Styx, back from the 80s, from complete irrelevance here in almost 2019. So maybe, just maybe, we will not have to deal with Patriots fatigue and Belichick's monotonal grunts again in a Super Bowl. Maybe, just maybe, the dynasty is dying nasty, with the Pats losing back-to-back December games for the first time since 2002. The more I see AFC teams endure ordeals, the Chiefs and their defense, Steelers' inconsistency, Patriots' deficiencies, the more I think this truly could be a year for an upstart in that conference, such as the Chargers, whose leader, Anthony Lynn, is your coach of the year. He has dealt with injuries. He has dealt with that unsettled situation in a small soccer stadium. He's dealt with having very few fans, an orphan existence in LA, which doesn't even know the Chargers are here and wouldn't care if it did know. Is this the year when maybe the Texans, with Deshaun Watson and J.J. Watt creating a double-edged balance, finally break through? Nobody hotter than Andrew Luck and the Colts, who shut out the choking Cowboys and have their own coach of the year candidate in Frank Reich. Not that Zeke Elliott was having any part of an Indianapolis resurgence. He says the Cowboys simply sucked, and they did.
We just came out there and just didn't do our jobs. We got beat in all aspects of the game, but I think a loss like this was very much needed. I think it's better for us in the grand scheme of the season, and I think we need to get put in check. I think we need a reality check, and I think that we need someone kind of just remind us, you know, that you know we still have a lot of ball left, and I mean nothing's gonna be given. We gotta go out there and take everything. With the guys we had in there, we had enough. We have enough talent to go out there and beat that team. I just think that we just came out there and played poor.
For all the high-powered offenses, none more so than the Pat Mahomes-led Chiefs, balance does win out in the postseason. And remember, Kansas City has been abysmal at Arrowhead Stadium in the postseason, losing its last six, including last January, to Tennessee. Speaking of the Titans, no running back has been better than Derrick Henry, who just might lead this team to another wild card berth. For the Chargers to win the AFC, they need their health to improve, but will Melvin Gordon and Keenan Allen be at full strength moving forward? They can win on the road, obviously, having done so shorthanded in KC, Seattle, Pittsburgh, but now the Chargers no longer are a sleeper. Everybody gunning for them, starting with Baltimore in the StubHub Center this coming weekend. It's a Saturday night game, which means, I don't know, maybe half the 27,000 seats actually might be filled with Charger fans after that thrilling win in Kansas City. Well, not having any sort of real fan base and knowing that they're still hated down the 5 freeway in San Diego inspire the Chargers or depress them? I'm rooting for them. And maybe someday soon, Stephen A. Smith will actually realize they have moved to Los Angeles, or Carson. On any list of impossible events in life, the rise of the Cleveland Browns from the American sports gutter was seemingly a lock, right? But lo and behold, look at what Baker Mayfield has done. Marvelous stuff. Magical stuff. He has become as dynamic and inspirational in his rookie season as he was at Oklahoma, combining that infectious charisma with a veteran-like presence to shake the franchise's loser tag, and I think for a long time. When he was taken number one by general manager John Dorsey, I suspected Mayfield might be the best quarterback in his class and a future star. I also was aware of the Cleveland curse, but he has thrashed right through that curse, jackhammered through it, and his emergence has happened quicker than expected, jibing perfectly with the bursts of rookie running back Nick Chubb and the ascent of that defense, all with John Dorsey's stamps. Once the Browns dumped Coach Hugh Jackson, they were ready to soar, and of all the head coaching openings in the NFL, this one, Cleveland, somehow has become the most attractive. Look at both sides of the ball. Who wouldn't want to crack at that? You are an instant hero in that city if you take that job. Would Lincoln Riley leave Oklahoma to make his creation, Mayfield, even better? And will Kyler Murray, who had every bit the Heisman season that Mayfield had in Norman, follow suit and realize he can make more immediate and future money and have more success in the NFL than he would in baseball? The Browns were motivated before their victory in Denver by a speech from who else? Kobe Bryant, who is on tour barnstorming for his new book, and it's called The Mamba Mentality, How I Play. I guess Kobe is now doing football teams the nights before games in hotel ballrooms. What the hell? Why not? Because guess who was a huge Kobe fan growing up in Texas? Yep, Mayfield.
I have a tremendous amount of respect for Kobe. He's just one of those guys, attitude-wise, there's nobody else in the world like him. He's unbelievable. He's one of my idols growing up. I'm not good at basketball, so I wouldn't like that. But just mentality-wise, work ethic, you know, determination, will to win. It was so awesome getting to hear from him, and he was so honest about everything. And you normally don't get to hear that from somebody. It's a legend like that. And so it was good for us to hear that, and I really enjoyed it. Getting our guys to believe in it and do their job, that was one thing that he kept harping on, was it doesn't matter what anybody else does. You got to do your job first and foremost, and then after that, you can start worrying about the big picture. And so it was, maybe it did, maybe it didn't. I definitely enjoyed it, though. It's something mentality-wise, going on the road, having his mentality is pretty important.
Last round of the Broncos was 1990. Were you aware you just broke the longest head-to-head streak, losing streak in the NFL?
Nope. 5 years later, I was born, so not really. That's a long time.
And the Chicago Bears completing their unlikely quantum leap by winning the NFC North and the likely number three seed behind the Rams and the Saints. I didn't see that coming. There's nothing like a cool marriage proposal to go with a division title. And Bears lineman Charles Leno Jr. indeed dropped to one knee at midfield after the victory over Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers, who, by the way, keeps getting ripped by former Packers, with Leroy Butler popping him for being outplayed by Mitchell Trubisky. But never mind about the Aaron Rodgers saga. Let's shift back to Leno, and here's how that proposal sounded.
Oh, boy. Jennifer Marie Roth, will you love to be Charles? I mean, Jennifer Marie Leno Jr.
Yes.
Will you?
Yes.
You accept?
Yes.
You accept?
Yes.
I love you, baby.
Then Leno had some fun with the media afterward, cracking wise like Jay Leno, although they are not related.
It was coming soon, but once I found out we could clean this week, I had to speed things up. I had to speed up the process. So I kind of planned it early this week.
Did you get a chance to talk to her dad first?
I did all that. Don't worry. I made sure I took the proper procedures.
You did protocol.
Yeah, I did that.
You started with a false start penalty, right?
I was juiced. You know what I mean? I was a little bit amped up, you know? So I didn't know how that thing was going to plan out. But, you know, I scratched that after that play, and I moved on.
How do you feel?
The ring?
What?
Who had the ring?
I had it in my sock.
It was in your sock.
I'm kidding.
No,
I can't say that. It was in a very safe place.
I think a good guess might be Tony Meadows.
Yeah,
you're not going to say.
No, I'm not going to say.
You guys had a lot of belief.
You guys, what if he didn't win?
What if we didn't win?
Were you going to propose?
Still going to do it.
You were.
But I just had a feeling. I knew the way we prepared this week. I knew the way our team was ready. And I just had a feeling.
The Bears could get a first-round home game against the rival Vikings, who rallied around the firing of offensive coordinator John DeFilippo with a 41 spot against Miami. Where was this new OC Kevin Stefanski all along? After the victory, Vikings owner Ziggy Wolf said he is very happy with Coach Mike Zimmer, whose daughter, Corey, I told you about this last week, courageously ripped Minnesota fans, defended her father on social media the other day. I love that. I'm happy for her. I'm happy for her father. And I think all of those idiots on social media owe them an apology. Of course, social media trolls have no empathy for anybody. They are sickos, and they're not going to be apologizing. In fact, they'll probably be writing me now. And while the sloppy Seahawks laid an egg against the 49ers, I still expect Seattle to be the other NFC wild card. Though next time a kick returner is running for a touchdown, the ancient place kicker Sebastian Janikowski might want to make an effort instead of letting the guy run right by him. Didn't even lift an arm, just sort of let him go by him. He didn't want to be in the poster. He didn't want to be on the blooper tape. Sebastian, you're being paid a healthy salary to be a football player. Instead, you look like the Michelin man. That was embarrassing for kickers everywhere. In the never-ending ad nauseum over a debate that has only one answer, Michael Jordan is the greatest basketball player of all time, not LeBron James. How fascinating to see James bow at Jordan's feet when the Lakers played in Charlotte. I have no doubt LeBron will own an NBA team someday, perhaps the Cavs. And for all of Jordan's epic achievements as a player, his ownership skills, I've got to say, have been pathetic. But as a player, James can stop talking now about chasing a ghost he cannot catch when he has lost six times in the NBA Finals and when he has not always maximized the talent around him, unlike MJ. Here was LeBron speaking of Jordan.
Have you met MJ? What was that like when you met him for the first time?
It was godly. I've said that over and over before, but it was like meeting God for the first time.
In what ways did he pave the way for guys like you to broaden kind of your business empire?
MJ made the game global. He made the game global. He made people all over the world want to watch the game of basketball. Because of his marketability, because of the way he played the game of basketball, because of who he was, he kind of transcended that era. We needed, Bird and Magic. When they came into the league, it was fitting. It was perfect, perfect timing for Magic to be with the Lakers and Bird to be with the Celtics, and all the battles that they went through. And then when MJ came in 84 and, started to do what he did, he made the game global. And obviously, that 92 Barcelona run that the Dream Team had, it just solidified why he was the best athlete in the world to do as such. So, and then between MJ and David Stern, they turned into what it is today. And Adam Silver and guys like myself are just trying to keep it going.
And let me say this: James Harden is a smarter basketball player than LeBron James. Yeah, I said it. Come and get me. Harden has mastered the competitive head game more than any other NBA superstar, including LeBron and Durant and Curry, proving it again with clever fakes, lean-ins, mental gamesmanship that led James to whine about foul calls with his younger teammates, all resorting to actually keeping their hands behind their backs so they wouldn't be whistled for personals on Harden's 50-point night. That was painful to watch. LeBron should not have joined in the no hands protest. By doing so, he showed poor leadership. He's trying to be one of the kids. Why doesn't he tell them, hey kids, wake up, grow up, this is the NBA, this is what James Harden does. He is so clever, Harden. I know he's inconsistent, but when he's on, he's a joy to watch. And I'll tell you what, if the Lakers just generally aren't better at defending, protecting the three-point line, and making their own threes, this ongoing course in basketball-ology, LeBron-ology, will not end well, I'm telling you. The Rockets still need help in the trade front, but even in the stacked Western Conference, you'd be foolish to dismiss Houston as a playoff team. Here was Coach Mike D'Antoni chuckling about the Lakers' complaints, as well he should have. I was chuckling, too.
When a team like the Lakers last night talking so much during the game, after the game, about the calls, the fouls that James draws.
Yeah. They should talk about it. They shouldn't foul. they foul. They don't want to. You walk under a guy, put a foot under him, it's a foul. That's what we've been doing, and, sorry.
The Lakers continue to baffle us with inconsistency after giving up the fourth 50-point triple-double of Harden's career in that loss. They rebounded with an electric blowout of the Hornets with Lonzo Ball playing the best game of his young NBA career, leading a wild running game as Jordan moped up in his suite. And you know what? LaVar Ball continues to be nowhere in sight. Stay away, old man. Cause and effect. Hey, that night anyway, LeBron and Lonzo became the first teammates in 11 years in the league to have triple-doubles in the same game, and the first Lakers to do so since, Magic and Kareem in 1982? Damn! This time Jordan didn't swat any of his players in the back of the head, though he probably wanted to. Then, on Sunday, the Lakers came out sluggish, back-to-back on the road, poor babies, and they were rocked by the discombobulated Washington Wizards, with LeBron as sluggish as anybody, actually outleaped for a rebound in the third quarter by somebody named, and I had to look this up, Tomas Satoransky, while having his share of clanked shots and turnovers in a 13-point effort. LeBron James, 13 points. Oh, These guys had to like get on a charter flight with lobster and steak and who knows what, little champagne. It's about an hour from Charlotte to D.C., and it looks like they didn't even want to get out of bed. That is why the Lakers are going nowhere this year. So stop the LeBron freight train here. I don't want to hear it again. Until they capitalize on situations like that, until they win consistently on the road and beat teams they should beat, then I am not jumping on this LeBron thing. LeBron MVP? Go check out the tape of the Sunday game, okay? By the way, the league's still buzzing over why a ref teed up Lance Stephenson for celebrating the other night with an air guitar riff. I'll tell you why. Even though I like fun as much as anybody, if you let Lance get away with that, then everybody else in the league is doing something after every basket or defensive play. Sorry. Just as we witness breathtaking greatness in the NBA, we also see mind-numbing dysfunction. Nothing quite like a three-way deal that was comically aborted over which Brooks. Did you see this? Marshawn Brooks, Dylan Brooks, Mel Brooks, Brooks Koepka was to be included in a trade involving the Memphis Grizzlies, Phoenix Suns, and the aforementioned Wizards. This is mind-boggling. In agreeing to send veteran Trevor Ariza to the Wiz, the Suns and their historically inept owner, Robert Sarver, thought they were getting, or they tried to spread the word anyway, in sneaking a fast one, the talented Dylan Brooks, along with Wayne Selden. The Grizzlies, however, assumed they were giving up the less valuable Brooks on their roster, seldom used Marshawn Brooks, all of which led to the deal dying out until it was resuscitated the next day without Memphis, with Ariza indeed going to Washington, Kelly Oubre Jr. and Austin Rivers going to the Suns, and both Brooks's staying in Memphis, where there is one Brooks Brothers store at the Shops at Saddle Creek. I did look that up. How does this happen? Seems Phoenix and Memphis did not communicate directly on the deal. Shouldn't all three of these teams be on the same conference call? No. According to the Grizzlies owner, Robert Pera, this was not a three-way conference call. Sarver, though, claims it was. I don't believe anything out of Sarver's mouth. I believe the Grizzlies here. The Grizz say they did the deal through Wizards GM Ernie Grunfeld, who assumed Dylan was the Brooks at the Phoenix, not Marshawn, a colossal error on Grunfeld's part. And he has let that franchise crash amid locker room infighting and underachievement. This is bad business all the way around. A farce made for Mel Brooks, with leaks from Sarver and the Wizards happening, obviously. Here was Memphis GM Chris Wallace happy to be out of that deal as both Brookses remain with the Grizz.
Obviously, there was a three-way trade between Phoenix, Washington, and ourselves that had been agreed upon, and we were very clear about who was in the trade. Contrary reports, it was not Dylan Brooks, and then, which put us in a very difficult situation with our players. Individuals from one or both of those teams leaked the deal while we were playing last night, and that forced me to do something I've never done in 30 plus years working this league with seven teams, is to drag two players out of the locker room and tell them they've been traded, and then eventually have to come back and tell them, oh, no, you haven't been traded. So we take our player relations very seriously. We ask a lot of these guys in weeks, you know, and we stay and try to communicate with them at all times. We do not want them to know about trades from another party. We want to be the ones to tell them. So, again, we were forced to come in at that time and say something. That put us in a very difficult situation. And fortunately, Marshawn and Wayne are pros. And when I explained to them afterwards, they were okay with the situation, and we're all moving forward. But what happened last night was unfathomable. I've never experienced this before.
All of which doesn't help the low public approval rating of Sarver, who wants public money in Arizona for arena renovations and was excoriated by a Phoenix resident named Greta Rogers at a town hall meeting. Listen to this.
Mr. Sarver has done nothing to improve this team
In the 14 years he's owned it, he's never funded or bought, paid for two or three key players, which make any sports team, professional sports team, successful or on the road to success. He's so tight, he squeaks when he walks. And you have been negotiating with this kind of person? Shame on each and all of you. And upon you, Ed, I thought your principles were higher and better than this. We are not in the business of paying taxes to support private enterprise, and especially not an entertainment enterprise.
And next time Steph Curry tries to crack a joke questioning whether the moon landing ever happened, he needs to point out, hey, I'm just kidding. He didn't do that last week. And ever since, America thinks he's some wacko truther, leaving Steph vulnerable to mockery in places such as Sacramento, which usually is the mocked, not the mocker. As the Warriors starting lineup was introduced the other night, an old clip of an astronaut walking on the moon was playing on the video screen inside Golden One Center as some Zoom Zoom Moon song played on the speakers. The Warriors burst out laughing, and then Steph laughed as well. But more importantly, Curry, on his off day, Saturday, hosted a 16-minute Instagram live video chat with retired astronaut Scott Kelly, raising awareness about NASA's continuing mission. This is what I love about Curry. He can turn a potential crisis, PR-wise, into a positive.
So I do not want in any way, shape, or form to demean the significant accomplishment that you and people that you work with on a daily basis were able to make a reality. And so for that, I'm obviously genuinely, sorry for how that came across. And I want to use this as an opportunity, obviously, to promote some positivity, some progress for us as we, as we talk about, again, NASA's work that's ongoing today. And then you reached out to me and wanted to have that conversation. So I wanted to kind of put a question out to you in terms of, I don't have much background and knowledge and information on exactly the ins and outs of what goes on in NASA, kind of what your experience has been, and really just to start kind of, why did you get into, that profession and kind of, what's your experience been, working for NASA and being an astronaut?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm kind of familiar a little bit with these internet stories taking on a life of its own, because I said something recently that just went absolutely insane, and it's unfortunate, and it's like it's really hard to walk back. And the other thing is, I actually get a lot of people when I do public speaking that'll bring these things up about the moon and the earth being flat, and it's funny. I get it. I think it's funny at times. But what happens is then when people believe those things, they believe the other things that are more important, like climate change not being real, and vaccines, and 9/11 being a government conspiracy theory.
It would be a shock now if Manny Machado didn't sign with the Yankees, who have a meeting Wednesday with the skilled but controversial slugger. And they want to know why he was such an ass clown in October and whether he meant it when he said he's not a quote-unquote Johnny Hustle sort of player. You'd better be, for the amount of money you want. You want $300 million-plus, and you're not a Johnny Hustle sort of player. Machado says it was taken the wrong way. Then why does he have spurts of a lackadaisical attitude from time to time? Chances are he'll say the right things at the meeting, and the Yankees will have another big bat in a monster lineup. As for Bryce Harper, he wants to play for the Dodgers, but they once again are dawdling with their resources. I talked about this last week. I talk about it every podcast, it seems. When it's time for the Dodgers to spend a big chunk of that $8 billion TV deal that blacks out most of Southern California, the Phillies will make the biggest play for Harper, and I say the White Sox are typically and disgustingly toying with their suffering fans by trading for, get this, Machado's brother-in-law First baseman Yonder Alfonso. This is a Reinsdorfian ploy, if I've ever seen one. I mean, come on. This way, if Machado does sign with the Yankees, Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner, can say, hey, we tried, even if Reinsdorf never wanted to spend $300 million for Machado in the first place. And he only owes, in this case, $8 million in the process for Alfonso's 2019 salary. So for Jerry, this is like $292 million less than what he would have to spend, and he's got an out now. He's got an escape hatch. And then the fans will be mad at Machado for not joining his brother-in-law. See how Reinsdorf thinks? He thinks he's clever. I think he's horseshit. I carry on here. I'm having fun with this man here in December. After the boring winter meetings, MLB really should be imposing a trade and free agent signing deadline so fans are not forced to wait for weeks and maybe months for deals to be made. Red Sox baseball boss Dave Dombrowski, who just won a World Series and might win another, had it right in calling for a pre-holiday deadline for all of this activity, saying the sport needs a break with pitchers and catchers reporting in, what, less than 2 months? Dombrowski says the younger GMs out there only care about work and will drag these matters into the new year. Maybe the young guys could learn from Dave, who doesn't want to work all year, and he wins the World Series. Of course, he has the highest payroll in baseball, but his bosses trust him. I mean, maybe Andrew Friedman should say, damn, we've got all this money here. I'm going to start spending some of it for Bryce. No, Andrew wants to be smarter than everybody. He's not. Dombrowski is the smartest of them all. Anybody thinking about the fans through all of this? Nope. Baseball has a commissioner only in name. As a leader, Rob Manfred is more useless than Bud Light Selig. He should be grabbing a hold of this situation and say, we had a perfect opportunity to make a lot of news during the football season last week. Nope, we're just going to dawdle and dilly-dally and we'll do what we want. And that's why baseball is the number four sport. I had somebody call me the other day and say, what do you mean number four sport? You mean three? No. NFL, NBA, college football is three. Preferring not to see Alabama play Clemson for the fourth straight year in the college football playoff in Santa Clara, California, of all places, I'm straining to figure out ways how Oklahoma and or Notre Dame can pull off upsets in the December 29th semifinals. The Sooners? I say Murray. I'm not predicting this. I'm just trying to concoct reasons. Murray goes berserk with an all-time performance that leads him to bag that baseball career for the NFL. Yet if he does that, you know it must involve ball control. Murray and his running backs need to rush for close to 200 yards. They need the Georgia blueprint without the goofy stuff Georgia does. And as leaky as the Oklahoma defense can be, that unit did make big plays late to beat Texas and West Virginia. But Alabama is not Texas or West Virginia. Getting pressure on Tua Tagovailoa, as Georgia did, is the key, and blitzing is a mandate early and often. And Alabama does not convert in the red zone as much as you think. Most of all, no turnovers for the Sooners and Murray. I think an Oklahoma victory is more likely than a Notre Dame win, which can happen only if the Irish pray at the feet of Touchdown Jesus, then pray in the grotto, then pray before they go to bed, and then pray when they wake up in the morning, and then they've got to hope that Travis Etienne, the best running back America doesn't know yet, doesn't make the team bus in Dallas for Clemson. And no wonder Notre Dame coach Brian Kelly is the latest to suggest an 8-team expansion would improve the playoff system, keeping in mind that Notre Dame, as an independent not required to play a conference title game, could qualify just about every year under an 8-team system.
I think that the narrative has been one of, well, we just entered into this agreement and we've just started this process. I think we've journeyed into it a little bit deeper now that I think that there's probably, from a commissioner's standpoint, an appetite to begin dialogue. But I'm just standing here as the football coach at Notre Dame. I don't have any inside information to share with you. I can tell you that there is an appetite for conversation about it. How that all figures into the grand scheme of things, you know, who really knows? But I sure am one that would register a vote on the expanding the playoff, and where that takes us, I'm sure they'll kind of figure that out.
By the way, would Kelly consider an NFL head coaching gig? I say that train passed when the Bears hired Matt Nagy. I still wonder if Nick Saban could be coaxed for the right job if he wins his record-breaking 7th national title. What else is left for this guy to achieve in the college level? And he decides to attack unfinished business on the NFL level. Is that possible? What job would that be? Jets? No, he's not a New York state of mind guy. Tampa Bay? Why? Washington? Saban would kill Dan Snyder. Green Bay? I think Aaron Rodgers would kill Saban. Denver? Very awkward fit. Cleveland? Where he once worked under Bill Belichick? Maybe a slight thought or two, but no, Saban is not going to the NBA at 67 years old. That's a job for the younger Riley, or perhaps, here's a thought, Urban Meyer, 54, health permitting. Would Meyer jump if the Browns called? Not far from his hometown of Ashtabula, Ohio. Yeah, I think Urban would jump. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. Chris, would you be happy or sad if the Patriots faded away and never played in another Super Bowl? And with 2 weeks left in the regular season, who are your favorites to reach the big game in Atlanta? You still on that Rams-Chargers LA kick, Chris?
Well, I think the Chargers still have a good chance, Jay. The Rams? I don't think they need to worry about Atlanta. If anybody was booking tickets for the Rams side in Atlanta, you might want to go ahead and just turn those back in. Wow. Such a collapse. And look, a lot of people today defending, saying, oh, it's only two games. This is the first time it's happened. It's not so much the losses. If they were close losses, similar to how they lost to the Saints earlier in the season, okay. Jared Goff literally looks like he doesn't know how to play quarterback anymore. So, wow. Now, some people could say, well, Tom Brady yesterday didn't know how to play quarterback either. True, but Tom Brady's got the gold to back it up. Or not the gold. Well, I guess gold. There's gold in those rings. He's got the rings to back it up where we kind of go, okay, sure. When Jared Goff wins 5 Super Bowls, we'll go ahead and give him a pass when he decides not to look like he plays quarterback anymore in the NFL. I am not sad to see New England not make it. I would love to see some new blood in there. Chargers play in the Super Bowl. Who they'll play in the NFC? Is it Chicago now with the hot hand? Jay, interesting stuff. The Rams, here's the thing. No longer are the last two games of the season for the Rams, the Cardinals and the Niners, the games that people literally were laughing just mere weeks ago, laughing at those games ending the season. No longer locks, Jay, especially after the Niners' big win off the Seahawks. Wow.
As I said, Chris, Maroon 5 is the solo act at the moment for the Super Bowl. Because of Colin Kaepernick-inspired politics, the NFL is having trouble finding anybody else for the halftime show. Keeping in mind that the gig is free, these people are not paid, should the biggest musical stars, Chris, obey the Kaepernick movement or still take advantage of the biggest global platform they'll ever have? I would do the gig myself.
You think they would do the gig? A lot of exposure, but hey, you know the other thing about celebrities nowadays? There's so much money coming in from iTunes and Google Play, wherever you buy music for Google, and music videos on YouTube getting hundreds of millions of views, creating more revenue that way, that the free exposure that you get on the Super Bowl, yeah, it's big, but is it? Are you going to go against the grain? Are you going to do business and perform for free for the evil, evil NFL in their mind? No, Jay. No, they're not. So what do we get? Maroon 5. And the funny thing is some of the old rock and roll, you know, Springsteen, obviously I'm a big Springsteen guy, as I've talked about before, who put on a great Super Bowl halftime show, what was that, 10 years ago now at this point? He's not going to go. Artists like that aren't going to, you know, side with the NFL over the Kaepernick issue. This could eventually create just a change in dynamic of what the halftime show means. But for this season, for this year, let's enjoy Maroon 5.
And I know, Chris, that you have urged patience with LeBron and the Lakers, but I'm noticing a pattern of wild inconsistency. They were brilliant in Charlotte, yet that win was sandwiched by an embarrassing display of no-hands defense in Houston, and then that crash against the woeful Wizards when even LeBron looked disengaged. What do you make of this team as the Christmas Day game in Oakland nears?
Well, Saturday, the Lakers probably played their best game of the season, and then Sunday, they looked like they didn't know how to play basketball. And then Sunday, that all went away against John Wall and the Wizards. If they play that way against the Warriors on Christmas Day, they're going to get steamrolled. I still would preach patience, Jay, but patience is running a little thin. The Rockets' loss was embarrassing. The way they conducted themselves was embarrassing. Consequently, I think we're only probably a few more losses away from LeBron starting to, yes, get ready for it, call out his teammates and call out Luke Walton. And then really, Jay, that will be the Christmas miracle we've all been waiting for. And then maybe again, I will call LeBron that B word. I don't want to use it during the holiday season. But stand by for LeBron going back to the LeBron playbook, my friend.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. As a moneymaker, Joakim Noah has been a robust success in the NBA. But he's also the poster child for career underachievement. And I do wonder how great he would have been if he wasn't partying all the time. Noah appeared on the Chris Vernon Show in Memphis and admitted that, yep, he was too blitzed in New York and in Chicago to focus on basketball, which, given his $72 million deal in 2016, which he's still being paid for, he is a monstrous waste of talent and money.
I can look back on it and say, you know, I thought I was ready for New York City, but, you know, I wasn't. And it's you know, it's something that I got to live with. And but
you're not ready for it. How? The pressure?
Not just the pressure. I think that I was a little bit, I remember after the first game, I probably had like 60 people in my house. You know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm too lit. I'm too lit to play in New York City. I'm too lit to play in New York City. You know, this Memphis is perfect for me.
Chicago was okay though.
Chicago, we were lit in Chicago, but I was young, yeah. So you recover faster, you know.
A Marriott aside, Noah used to spend summers near here in a loft on Abbot Kinney Boulevard. Right down the street at the moment is a MedMen Superstore, a legal marijuana dispensary. And they're expanding next door. They've only been open for a few months, but they're already expanding to sell weed-infused meals. You can pop in your oven at home as you're getting stoned. You can also get stoned eating the meal and get stoned eating the dessert. Wait a minute. Is that Noah walking down the street as I speak? He's back. Chicago is a psycho town when it comes to sports, filled with a lot of dumb people with a distorted sense of reality. So it should surprise nobody that the Blackhawks' full costumed mascot, his name Tommy Hawk, responded to a 5'5", 160-pound fan who jumped him in the corridor at the United Center by body slamming the guy and throwing punches instead of simply holding him until security arrived. You can look at it on the internet. It's painful. It goes on for a minute or two. This Blackhawk mascot just pummeling this guy. Pummeling him. Thing is, this is not the first time a Chicago sports mascot encountered trouble. Benny the Bull once was arrested for punching a cop at the Taste of Chicago Festival, and Double, another Bulls mascot, was arrested once on a drug charge. I am so happy not to live there anymore. God bless those people. Thank God the Bears won. They have something to do. Whereas cities once had to bribe their way to host the Olympic Games, the new sensibility is this. Only teams with existing infrastructure, such as LA, are assured of not losing money. as so many venues from Athens to Rio to Sydney have done through the years. So yes, Salt Lake City, which greased the palms of the International Olympic Committee to land the 2002 Winter Games, should be a slam dunk to win the 2030 Games after winning the USOC's vote over Denver and Reno. Of course, this is assuming in today's mad world that a global athletic festival is still possible in 11 years. My industry, sports media, is filled with liars from the executive suites on down. You expect it from a 70-something dope such as Woody Page, who said something about me recently that wasn't remotely true, and when I called him out on an email privately as a liar and a fool for life, he didn't deny either insult. So, I don't know. I could have stayed classy here, but you know what? I'm just talking about liars, okay? That's also just petty stuff. I'm worried about the well-regarded Marcus Thompson of the Athletic website. Marcus, so locked in to the Warriors culture. He wrote a book with Curry. He's writing one with Kevin Durant. But right now, people in the industry asking, did he fabricate a conversation that never happened between Curry and rapper Mista Fab? Do I have that right? Mista Fab, F-A-B. In a column about Curry's influence in the Oakland community, Thompson said Curry and the rapper were, quote, laughing about a certain tranny sex scene, unquote. When I read that, I was enjoying the piece, and I read that and I stopped, and a lot of other people did too. First of all, why use the word tranny? Secondly, Curry and a rapper are laughing about a tranny sex scene. And I'm sorry I have to use this here. It's extremely sensitive. I'm only doing it in the context of this story. The Warriors are saying no such exchange happened, and even Mr. Fab weighed in to deny it, saying all sorts of kids were around when he was speaking at Curry at an event and that they only spoke about sports. So both the Warriors and Mr. Fab going out of their way to deny this, and then Thompson immediately apologizing on social media and said he was joking. What possibly is funny about using the word tranny in a story? What's funny about this? Or even what's funny about making it up? What else are you making up? And The Athletic said it has taken disciplinary action, but they aren't saying what it is. You have to be forthright. You can't just hide. The Athletic expecting every team it covers to be forthright, and yet they're hiding. This is bad. If Thompson completely made up the story, how does he remain employed? Where was the editor here? The Athletic, attempting to keep the dying business of sports writing alive, has a lot of problems, and they manifest itself when you see situations such as this. They have brought in too many writers. They're paying a lot of them with more equity, which is empty in many cases than actual salary. Too many of their stories are fraught with errors, two major ones in the Bay Area alone. In recent months, their editor-in-chief, Tim Kawakami, has allowed these whoppers to be published. No accountability for him. I'm rooting for The Athletic, but they won't tell us what their subscription numbers are. And I am a subscriber, and if they aren't forthright about Thompson's mistake, how can we believe the executives there about their business stability? And New York Knicks rookie Alonzo Trier, succeeding as an undrafted rookie, is wondering about all of his new and long-lost friends after signing a $6.8 million deal the other day. He was quick to fire back at these phony homies, writing on Instagram, quote, I appreciate the love, but any new homie, bro, cuz, or new chick that try to hit me today, tomorrow, or this week all of a sudden is canceled. Don't try to get close to me now or be friendly again, LOL. If you ain't really know me before today or wasn't hitting me up on a daily basis, keeping in touch, checking up on me every so often, it's quiet for you. LOL, Alonzo Trier. I think the post was even more impressive than his rookie season in New York. And every young athlete coming into big bucks for the first time should take heed. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever, ever let anybody mute you in life.